Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, hello, we should think about these things, not the other things, the things that nourish us and lift us up. That's advice from St. Paul in his letter to the Philippians, and we know he talked about these things too. We're taking a page from the St. Paul playbook and talking about the good stuff here on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation that accentuates the positive and helps us explore and affirm and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. Y'all know Jimmy G, my crackerjack engineer and chief fact checker. He's the one with all the power on the show, master of the bells and whistles.
I've got my finger on all the buttons here.
Yes. Behave yourself now.
I can turn your microphone off, but I wouldn't
Can you
dare.
Still hear me? Okay. Just try. There will be riots across America.
Yes, there will be.
Hey, so sad about Jerry Lewis, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, such a great comedian. He brought so much to the world of entertainment, so much wholesome entertainment. Just a comic genius. And he lived a good long life, and he left a great legacy in his work.
It was very recent when Raymond Arroyo had that really cool interview with him.
A very good quality interview. In fact, yeah. I think Mr. Lewis said it was one of the best interviews he'd ever enjoyed.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was on EWTN here. Right. So God rest your soul, Jerry Lewis. Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the lovely and expansive Christ Cathedral campus here in Orange County, California. We are the Diocese of Orange, and because the Diocese of Orange co-produces our show with EWTN, we hope to bring you into our faith family here in Orange County, as well as into our EWTN media family, which spans the universe. And you hear me often comment on what's happening here on this 35-acre campus nestled into prime Southern California real estate, with its landmark buildings, including this Tower of Hope, where we broadcast from. It has a 90-foot cross on its roof. You know, whenever our guests are coming on for the first time and they say, well, how will I be able to find the Tower of Hope on the campus? I always say, look for the 90-foot cross in the air.
An iconic building, to say the least.
Yeah, but there's lots of stunning architecture on this campus. It houses a grammar school academy, a cultural center with performing arts theater, art gallery, sculptures everywhere, a cemetery. And it's a parish church, so we are part of a vibrant Catholic community here. And today, we are going to introduce you to the musical component that distinguishes this Catholic destination. And we have two local guests who are going to talk about two very different aspects of the music of Christ Cathedral. First up, you are going to meet Ian Cabrera. He's kind of a big dog in the communications department for the diocese. And he's going to talk about a fantastic, fabulous music festival that's happening on campus here on September 8th and 9th. It's the second annual Christ Fest. And it's expected to draw close to 6,000 attendees to a celebration of the Christian faith through music and food and apparently some craft beer and chart-topping musical artists. How cool is that? Pretty cool.
And Ian wears the coolest socks I've ever seen. I'm always jealous of his socks.
I was noticing his shirt today. It's very cool and floral.
Yes.
Ian is just Mr. Cool.
We work closely together.
We're the square dogs in this studio today.
I am. I don't know about you.
And then at the half hour, I'll talk with Dr. John Romeri, who is the Director of Music Ministries and Organist for Christ Cathedral. Now, if you're snoozing off when I say organist, well, wake up, because Christ Cathedral will eventually house the organ of all organs, the Helen Wright organ, with nearly 15,000 pipes. Okay, now you're listening, right? Dr. John Romeri has a fascinating background in music, and you will really enjoy my conversation with this bright and entertaining musical genius in our good Catholic Church. Then, in my Chatting with Catholics segment, I take my microphone out to a local parish here in the diocese and talk with some parishioners, just average parishioners after Sunday morning Mass, about how they feel about singing at Mass. Do they like it? Were they honest? I'll let you be the judge of that. But first up, it's the Call Me Catholic countdown of the week. So you figured out by now that today we are talking about the music of our faith, music as an expression of faith. So just for fun, I am going to list the top 5 popular musical artists who stepped away from their secular brand for a while to record a spiritual album. You know some of those, Jimmy G?
Yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
coming to mind?
Well, let's see. Bob Dylan.
Ah, he's on my list.
Yeah.
You stepped on my line there, man.
Sorry.
There's actually a lot of them out there, but when I went upon further investigation, it would appear that some of their spiritual chapters in music might have been drug induced. So I definitely stayed away from those. I wanted to keep to the authentic ones. And I was prompted to do this because I legitimately have two popular musical artists whose spiritual recordings are pretty iconic to me. Pretty have a lot of spiritual gravitas.
Looking forward to this.
Yeah, so that's going to be number one and number two. So here we go. The top five rock or pop or country artists who recorded a serious spiritual album or two during their career.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Good. I'm glad you used the lively. It wouldn't have been appropriate to use the sort of angelic alternate we have for that. Okay. Okay, here we go. The top five rock or pop or country artists who recorded a serious spiritual album or two during their career. Okay, number five at the bottom of the list would be Olivia Newton-John.
Ah.
Yeah. Now, she has a great voice. Very, very popular. Has quite a bit of a fan base. I don't think she's recording a lot right now. Australian pop star.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A lot of people know her for the role Sandy in Grease. Okay. But in her mature years, she had a serious bout of cancer. She battled cancer, and it was a very grave medical episode in her life. So she recorded after that, after having made a very healthy recovery from that grave disease, she recorded an album called Grace and Gratitude that is very popular with her fans. Now, it addresses ecumenical faith leanings, not just strictly Christian, but it certainly has Christian themes, and it's lovely and contemplative. One of the songs is Let Go and Let God. Lovely. And, you know, she visited St. Pope John Paul II. She went and performed at a concert at the Vatican for him.
Wow.
So she is a spiritual woman, very talented. So check that one out, Grace and Gratitude. Number four would be Jimmy G's Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah.
What would we call Bob Dylan? A folk singer?
A poet.
A folk poet. Well, I guess in 1978, during a concert in San Diego, and I'm assuming he was having some spiritual awakenings during this time anyway, someone threw a silver cross onto the stage of a Bob Dylan concert, and it caught the artist's eye. So he was considering Christianity. He was contemplating Christianity at the time. And he might have looked at that as a sign, but in 1979, exactly 1 year later, he produced an album called Slow Train Coming, and all of the songs either express his strong personal faith or stress the importance of Christian teachings and philosophy. Now, interestingly, the evangelical nature of this record alienated a lot of his existing fans. But at the same time, many Christians were drawn into his fan base. You know who's a big fan of Bob Dylan is Bishop Robert Barron.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's a big fan of Bob Dylan. I remember reading about when he went to his concert in Santa Barbara last year.
Like a Rolling Stone.
Okay, that's right. Now, number three, you know, I always like to throw a little oddball into number three. So number three is going to be Hammer. Now, I know him as MC Hammer, but I guess he evolved into Hammer, the rap star. You can't touch this. Boo-doo-doo-doo.
That's right.
Okay,
right.
You know that one. All right, so he hit his pop stride in the late 80s and early 90s, and then his star really faded. I guess he was an extravagant spender, lost all his fortunes, and hit rock bottom, which is what usually happens before you find Jesus. And he did. He found Jesus, and he made an album called The Family Affair. Very spiritual, very pro-family. Now, interestingly, it was his own label, but they scuttled the release because they didn't think it was good for his image. And so there were only about 2,000 copies out there. Today it remains a lost record. It's kind of a collector's item. So if you come across a copy of Family Affair by Hammer, pick it up. You might be interested to hear about this phase of his life, his spiritual
life. I'm going to go check on Craigslist right now.
You can't touch this. Okay. Number two would be, oh, come on. Now these two guys got to come right to mind. Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we know this country western singer for his songs like Ring of Fire, Eyes Walked Into a Burning Ring of Fire, Walk the Line, Folsom Prison Blues. But he was a deeply spiritual man, and he recorded quite a few gospel albums in the course of his career. He was a very soulful man, and he spoke of it openly. He did not feel self-conscious about being a Christian. So he recorded quite a few albums that had a gospel nature. But the one that I love is Johnny Cash Sings Precious Hymns. It was his fifth gospel album and his 50th album overall.
Wow.
Yeah. So it has some greats on there like Rock of Ages, The Old Rugged Cross, Farther Along. I love that stuff. Totally love it. Okay. Now, number one, you gotta know. Come on. It's gotta be. We should have a drum roll. It's got to be Elvis Presley.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course. Elvis Presley was never, ever far from his spiritual roots. You know, those good old Southern boys, they love Jesus. Jesus was their friend. And he never shied from branding himself as a Christian during his entire career, even though he certainly got up and knew how to shimmy in his white jumpsuit. But, you know, we know him for Viva Las Vegas, or Hound Dog, All Shook Up. But could he sell a spiritual? Actually, really would bring you to tears. Now, the one I have is called Elvis Presley's Gospel Favorites, and it has How Great Thou Art and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. You know, God rest your soul, Elvis Presley. You were kind of a tortured man, but you brought so much beautiful talent into the world, beautiful music.
I kind of doubt Suspicious Minds is on that one.
You could spin that into a spiritual, I think. I think that's a good idea. Okay, there you go, bringing another meaning to the term soul music, my top five favorite pop music stars who recorded a spiritual album in their career. Hey, friends, check out our Facebook page, would you? That's facebook.com/callmecatholic. We'd love for you to join our Facebook family. You can find pictures and links to websites that we mention on the show. And you can leave us a comment or question, and we promise we'll answer you right away. And we'd be grateful if you gave us a wee bit of a like. You can also just send us an email to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. That's another sure way to reach us. We've got more music on tap for today's show. Coming up next is my conversation with Ian Cabrera, who's with the communications department here in the Diocese of Orange, and he's one of the men behind ChristFest, the second annual Christian music festival here on the Christ Cathedral campus, attracting a spectacular lineup of unique and popular music acts September 8th and 9th. Wait till you hear the details. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Anna Mitchell.
I had this formative experience during one Sunday Mass in the Easter season in seventh grade. During the Gloria, I remember having this sense of being filled. If you can imagine what it must feel like to be a cup being filled with water, that's how it felt. It started at my feet and it moved up my body. And I've come to believe that that was the Holy Spirit. And I can really trace my zeal for the faith back to that moment.
The Sunrise Morning Show, Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Being part of EWTN Media Missionaries is a perfect way to help us fulfill our calling from Christ to make disciples of all nations. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Another strong warning for parents about media usage for young children. I'm Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection, with another Media Minute on EWTN. Cleveland Clinic children's officials advising parents to keep babies and young toddlers away from all electronics for those crucial months when their speech is still developing. Dr. Kimberly Giuliano says children learn speech by experiencing it and having that communication and interaction with an actual person.
While a device may be exposing them to words, there's not that back and forth reciprocal interaction that teaches them the social piece behind it all. And that's where children really learn and solidify their language skills.
And recent research finding that children between the ages of 6 months and 2 years are likely to have a delay in their ability to use sounds and words for every 30 minutes of handheld screen time per day. The doctor says it's okay to expose a child to educational programming, but only when they are 18 months or older. I'm Teresa Tomeo with another Media Minute on EWTN.
Hello, this is Father John Paul Mary.
This is Debbie Giorgiani, co-host of Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
My friends, this is Bishop Kevin Vann of the Diocese of Orange. I want to thank you very much for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, greetings one and all. I am Peggy Normandin, and today on Call Me Catholic, we're digging the music. Christ Cathedral Campus, with us to share some background on a mega Christian music event happening here, right here, on September 9th, and attracting some of the biggest, most popular, and in some cases, most unique names in Christian music, is Ian Cabrera, everybody's favorite member of the communications department for the whole big Diocese of Orange, and co-orchestrator of the second annual Christ Fest, a celebration of the Christian faith through music and food, and let's not forget the craft beer, and chart-topping musical artists. It's expected to attract more than 6,000 music lovers from all the Christian communities in the region. September 9th, Ian Cabrera, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hey, Peggy, thank you.
Yeah.
It's 8th and 9th. Does that matter?
Oh, 8th and 9th. All right, we'll get into that. And September 8th is the Spanish, exclusively
language, exactly.
Spanish event.
Yeah.
And then the September 9th is Saturday.
Exactly.
Okay, and it's the all day.
Yes.
So when
yes.
you buy a ticket, is it like a park hopper where you get both events?
It is not. But if you are so worldly that you speak Spanish and English. You can go
that's
to both nights.
That's pretty worldly.
I'm definitely going to try to go to the September 8th event because that's where it seems like all the action is going to be.
Yeah.
They're packing that whole night with...
Exclusively Spanish artists.
Yes, but they're like really big acts.
Well, I know, and that's cool. And Spanish music just has a certain vibe that's, I'm sure, liturgically and Christian music.
They have one of the largest mariachi group that's coming. I don't know. How do you say biggest without saying like making it sound like they're really fat?
Grande.
Plus grande. Well, I love, so it's mariachi with a Christian spin to it?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, that is awesome. And will they have the hat and the sombreros and all the...
I don't know that.
It will be colorful. It will be colorful.
It will be colorful, exactly.
Okay, let's move on to September 9th, which is the main big event, although exactly. September 8th sounds like it's going to be pretty awesomely lively. Who are the headliners September 9th, and what is the timing on this kind of event like?
So this event is going to run all day Saturday, from 2 in the afternoon till 10 at night. It's going to be a huge festival. And obviously, not everybody's going to go to the whole thing. But if you can, there's going to be stuff from the beginning to the end that's going to keep your attention.
Okay, give us a sample of some of the artists. The big headliner is...
Yes, is Mac Powell from Third Day.
Yeah.
And he's going to be rocking the house. And our other favorite is Las Siervas. They're a group of... Peruvian nuns who have flown up here for this show and the one on the 8th.
Well, there's 12 of them.
Yes.
And I think they're actually based in Peru, but they come from all around the world to form this 12-woman band. And honest to Pete, they are so adorable. There's the drums, the electric guitar, the vocals. They got the whole thing going on like a rock band.
Totally.
And their music is just spiritually charged with energy.
It's great because you can see... that they really love playing music, but you think about how much they love God and their message, and it just makes it so much better because they enjoy what they're doing.
And they wear their habits.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're into the whole theatrical exhibition of it.
Sure.
They are into the message, the expression of their music.
It's a prayer for them, totally.
And they're very popular, aren't they, Ian?
Yes. Actually, I think they're up for a Latin Grammy this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Jimmy G, you are a Christian music fan. Who are some of the favorite artists that are appearing on September 9th in your estimation?
Well, I know there's an act called Shane and Shane, a band called Rush of Fools. And the
Rush of Fools, that's such a cool name.
The headliner, Mac Powell of Third Day. Third Day has been a very popular band in Christian music for, gosh, probably 20 years now.
Yeah.
They have headlined big, big festivals before. And Mac Powell, he is the voice of Third Day. He's got a very distinctive
very
sound.
Gritty voice.
Yes.
And he is just absolutely amazing. So we're very fortunate to be able to have him as the headliner at this very unique event.
I heard his voice described as bluesy Southern rock swagger.
Right.
I mean, that's like, got it all. That's the perfect storm on stage.
No, totally.
Right, Ian?
Yeah, he's going to be a performance.
So how many people are you expecting?
So we're expecting, I mean, this event is geared towards young adults, but it's definitely open for the whole family.
Well, you had it last year. Was it just young adults last year? Or did
you
see a big
cross
section?
Everybody, yeah. It was better because we had the 40th anniversary, so people were excited about that. And so we got a lot of crossover, like you said, from the families and stuff. We're expecting that same thing. Like, this is an event for your family. You're coming with your kids. You're coming as a young adult. Your grandma's coming. Yeah, that's great. It should be great.
So logistically, how does it work? We're here on a 34-acre campus, and we're surrounded by really beautiful landmark buildings from our own Tower of Hope here to the Cultural Center and the Christ Cathedral building. So is it on the grounds?
Yes, exactly. We've sectioned off a portion of the campus, and we're going to throw a stage in there and let everybody fill this section of the campus. We're still pretty young, so we're trying to find our
well, you're
footing.
Very young, Ian, compared to Jimmy Jamie.
Well, as far as this festival that we're trying to create in the Diocese of Orange, we're still trying to find our footing. What's our niche? Who is the crowd that we're trying to attract? So,
And I know that you, in trying to craft this day of entertainment on Saturday, you really wanted to find some unusual acts. Not all, you know, like the Third Day guy. He's a big name. But the other names are sort of emerging, really cool artists that are emerging on the Christian scene. Like, tell us about Ike Endola.
Yeah, so he's not necessarily emerging. He's a huge Catholic artist. And kind of to your point, the thing that we realized was it's hard to find good, amazing Catholic artists that can like have that same stage presence. And so that's what this event is going to really try to highlight, is these really amazing Catholic artists
yeah,
in the music scene.
You know, it is interesting that in Christian music, it doesn't tend to be specifically Catholic. Now, Matt Maurer is an exception. Mm-hmm. He appeared last year.
He played last year, yeah.
So I like the idea that you're kind of thinking outside the box. You're trying to use this venue. It's kind of the Coachella of Christian music.
Yeah,
you know, you're bringing a lot of new, cool acts in. And there's also food.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be tons of food. Kind of inspired by the sisters, we're going to have a Peruvian vendor and some other vendors there as well.
Yeah, and beer.
Yeah, of course. but that's hopefully going to, I mean, you're going to be there all day. You got to eat something. You know, you got to have something to do while you're waiting for the next act.
Now, I have to say, Ian, that I have never been to a Christian rock concert. I appreciate it, and I love watching
it.
No
Stryper back in the day?
No.
Amy Grant?
No. Oh, no. No, I haven't. You know, but as I talked about in my Call Me Catholic Countdown, I like sometimes these secular artists that get off the path and do the spiritual album. I mean, I think that's kind of cool. Then they really have my attention. But I totally appreciate these people who dedicate their lives to Christian music. You know, interesting, you know who started out in exclusively Christian music and then went to secular is Katy Perry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she was a little gospel singer. And a lot of the blues singers did start out in church doing that. But I'd like to have you describe for me how the crowd behaves in these concerts. Are they up? Are they dancing? Are they, you know, taking pictures?
So last year, we kind of made a mistake, and we definitely learned our lesson this year. We set up a bunch of chairs too close to the stage, and people kind of pushed them back up out of the way because they wanted to get around and move and get close to the stage.
In front of the stage. That's that standing
exactly.
area.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we had like a little ramp where the artists could come and like interact with the crowd. And so they were there and really wanted to get close to the crowd too. So there's definitely this give and take between the crowd. And so that's what we're expecting this year.
Talking about the Christ Fest 2017 that's occurring on September 8th and 9th here at the Christ Cathedral campus. And Ian Cabrera, who's everybody's favorite representative from the communications department in the Diocese of Orange, is here telling us about it. He's a young guy. Do you love this kind of music, Ian?
You know what, Peggy? I think I'm really like you in that I appreciate finding God, the message of God in everyday interactions with people or in my music. So while I really do appreciate the musicianship and the message that these groups are delivering to us, is this going to be my first choice? No. But I'm really excited about this event because we don't have humongous names coming to our campus all the time. So to be able to see them this close is going to be
exciting. It's a beginning. Well, and I love watching the people watching the acts. I mean, that's to me very inspirational because they are so filled with the Spirit. Hey, so let's also talk about who the proceeds from this event benefit, because this is a very, very dynamic, cool cause that has really spoken to the heart of so many of us here in Orange County. But I think the story has become national, really.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Chef Bruno Serrato, or Sir Bruno Serrato, however you know him.
Sir Bruno Serrato.
Yeah, he has a charity, Katerina's Club, and they feed
thousands of children that go without food every
day.
And he works through the Boys and Girls Clubs. And he had an iconic restaurant here in Anaheim called the White House.
Yes.
And what happened to the White House?
So unfortunately, the White House burned down at the beginning of this year. However, that did not stop him. He has not stopped feeding these kids. He hasn't skipped a single day. And he actually moved production from his operation in Orange to our campus. So he cooks out of our kitchens here on campus.
That's so cool. Yeah, he didn't miss a beat. I mean, it was tragic. I remember being in the studio when Jimmy G read the news online that Chef Bruno's White House restaurant had burned down overnight. I mean, just it was an accident and boom, it was burnt to the ground. But he didn't miss a beat. His main incentive was to keep on doing the charitable work he was doing, which was feeding these kids, which shockingly go without dinner in Orange County. They don't get fed regular, nutritious meals.
I think a lot of them are kind of referred to as the hotel kids, aren't they?
Right. You're right.
Yeah. And he seeks them out and feeds them, and you see pictures of them, and they're just smiling like crazy. So will Chef Bruno Serrato be making an appearance here?
Actually, he will. He's going to offer a dinner for those interested.
Uh-huh.
And
so you can buy a ticket to that, maybe?
Yes, exactly. You can buy a ticket to dinner with Bruno.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's get back to the cute nuns, the Las Siervas, which means, by the way, do you know what that means? It means the handmaids.
Good. Ah, well, that's
beautiful. So they are such a cute, joyful group. I love the fact because you know what else? They're the only girl act.
You're right.
Yeah, I was looking at
all
the headlines.
All female,
going,
too.
They're all female, so they make up for the fact that there's no female presence on the other groups. Hey, Jimmy G, can you give us a little sound bite of some people talking about what this Christ Fest means to them as artists and as the people attending?
Yep, here we go.
Christ Fest, it's an opportunity for people to come together. There's something that happens in music. There's this unity that I think we all experience, a joy and a laughter that hits something in the soul. people are going to experience the joy of the gospel. They're going to listen to worship. They're going to be dancing, singing, eating really good food. A lot of the proceeds are going to go to help serve and feed people who are hungry. It's an opportunity for us to be like Christ and help out our local community.
Come to Christ Fest. You'll have the most incredible time. We're going to be coming here to just be people amongst the world, really, and expressing and just giving praise to the Lord.
Yeah, I think that really sums it up well. Don't you think, Ian, that it really gives you a sense of the Spirit? Because in the end, what are you trying to accomplish by hosting and putting this together? It's a big event.
Yeah, I think we realize the power that music has, especially today, and we want to use that as a tool to bring people together. Whether you're Christian or Catholic, we understand that there's something powerful about music that resonates with all of us. We want to bring people together through that.
How have you gotten the word out to non-Catholic Christian communities?
I think, Peggy, I think we're actually running some advertisements on the local Christian station, a station that I used to work at a while back. But I know that the Christ Cathedral, obviously, this is a campus that is a destination for people for a variety of reasons. But I think that this particular event is really awesome and unique because I know that this show, Call Me Catholic, airs nationwide. It airs worldwide. If you've been looking for an excuse to come check out this campus at Christ Cathedral, this would be a wonderful opportunity to do so.
And the tickets are remarkably affordable, considering it's like a whole day. When I think about how much people pay to go to Outside Lands or Coachella or some of these other Lollapalooza in Chicago, this is just an incredible bargain. And the quality of music is there. It's totally there. So the ticket prices are about $25. Is that correct, Ian?
Yeah. $25 to start, and then, you know, if you want a dinner with Chef Bruno or reserve seating, it goes up from there.
And where can they find out more about this fantastic event?
So the September 8th event is festivaldecristo.com, and christfestoc.org is where you can find info on the September 9th event.
And it's worth it to come in from, I mean, we say it's addressing our region, but really, if you are anywhere within the Southland, come on down. And there's plenty of hotels around here if you want to spend the night. Will you have a big screen for everybody to see that will project it for the people
standing back? Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Attached to the stage will be a huge jumbotron.
Yeah. So, Ian, thanks for doing this for our big Christian faith community here in Southern California. It's a great way to worship with others in a very uniquely contemporary and musical way. The second annual Christ Fest on the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, Southern California, September 8th and 9th. The website is christfestoc.com. Just find out more about it, even if you don't plan on attending. I think you'll really enjoy learning more about it and seeing what a lively, fun event this is.
Amen.
Hey, next you're going to meet Dr. John Romeri, the director of music and organist for Christ Cathedral, and you're going to have a lot more respect for the label organist after you hear Dr. Romeri talk about the 20,000 pipe organ that he'll be maestro over when the Christ Cathedral opens its fully refurbished doors next year. He also hosts his own radio show right here in this studio on Immaculate Heart Radio. John Romeri has lots of stories to share, and they all have musical overtones. So stay with us for more music lessons today on Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn.
If you're a Catholic and you're watching cable news or network news, you're getting your news on the internet, how often do you read Catholic-based stories? Not that often. Here at News Nightly, you can get the national news with a Catholic perspective. And it is so valuable for Catholics to be able to see the world through that perspective.
EWTN News Nightly with Lauren Ashburn. Weekdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Saint Jose Maria Escriva says that we are called to light up the pathways of this earth by being sowers of peace and joy. This comes from being aware that we are sons and daughters of God. On the road of life, though, we find dangers, but God walks with us every step of our life, pouring out the gifts of His Holy Spirit upon us. Our Lady is our companion, like GPS in our car, connected to the cloud and bringing the latest updates to help us navigate our journey and get out of traffic on the way to the eternal kingdom. We don't want to get into family fights on our way to God's vacation destination, but we should be the sowers of peace and joy. We shouldn't accept substitutes, accept only the authentic identity of being His children, His sons and daughters. Let's grow in happiness and bring peace to those around us. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God.
EWTN, live truth. Live Catholic. Be a part of Mother Angelica's mission. EWTN Radio is seeking a dynamic producer to join our growing radio team. The EWTN Radio producer is responsible for managing all aspects of live and recorded programs, develops program ideas consistent with EWTN's mission, and collaborates with the leading voices in Catholic radio. For all the details about this exciting opportunity, click on employment@EWTN.com.
Carry EWTN with you everywhere when you download the EWTN app. You can enjoy EWTN TV and radio live streams, shows on demands, prayers and devotionals, and the latest Catholic news. Visit EWTNapps.com today.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Welcome, welcome. We're glad you're with us today on Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, orchestrating the show on music in the Diocese of Orange. So we just talked with Ian Cabrera about the big Christfest Christian Music Festival happening on this campus September 9th. Big headliners for that event. And now I want you to meet our resident director of music ministries for the whole big Diocese of Orange, Dr. John Romeri. Dr. Romeri is a very pedigreed professional in the music world, and I'm going to let him tell you about his background. But he also hosts his own radio show on Immaculate Heart Radio. It's called Music from the Tower, recorded here in this very same studio. So, Dr. John Romeri, welcome to Call Me Catholic. This is very familiar turf for you, sitting here on the
eighth floor. It is indeed. I'm on the wrong microphone, though. Thank you, Peggy, for having me.
Across from this character, Jimmy G.
I know. It's great.
Yeah, Jimmy G helps out on all our radio shows.
I certainly do. It's a joy.
Which one do you like the best, Jimmy G?
Which one do I? Oh, thanks for putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Which child
which
do you
one,
love the most?
Jimmy?
I'll get back to you on that.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. He's such a diplomat. So, Dr. Romeri, you
please,
can
just call me John.
Thank you. Okay, yeah. But I wanted your permission first.
Thank you.
Okay. You joined our diocese as the director of music ministries in 2015. The diocese had to have embarked on a massive talent and skill set search to find someone who could fit into this enormous role, this kind of epic music ministry role here in the Diocese of Orange, because you are coming into this Christ Cathedral with its legendary acoustics and organ and the huge Diocese of Orange. So tell me, what qualified you for that job?
I have no idea. I have no idea. They were just all just out of their minds.
But you lied a lot then.
I lied a lot. Well,
I
backdoored into this as a consultant for the committee. So I helped them decide the parameters of what they might. So I came in two or three times just to help the committee decide what a music program at Christ Cathedral might look like.
Mm-hmm.
This now is my fourth Catholic cathedral here in this great country of ours. I was at the cathedral in Pittsburgh. I was there 19 years and in the cathedral the last seven as cathedral musician and director of music for the diocese. Then I was at the cathedral in St. Louis, Missouri for 18 years. And then I left that position to go follow my friend Cardinal Regali to the Philadelphia Cathedral, and I stayed there 5 years. And so
he doesn't look that old, Jimmy G.
Yes.
You were a child prodigy, I think.
I must have been wrong. But who is fortunate like that to have that many wonderful positions?
So
I was so lucky.
Each archdiocese or diocese has its unique sort of sets of interests, sets of challenges. What are you facing here in the Diocese of Orange that
Lord,
is unique to
there's
this diocese?
There's nothing in my comfort zone here. Nothing. And I think that's probably why they asked me to be a consultant, because I had lived in those three different dioceses and really under three different scenarios. You know, at one, I was a diocesan employee charged with the cathedral. Another, I was a cathedral musician who moonlighted as the diocesan director. You know, so I had all of these different scenarios that I could bring to their table and say, what shall we be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so what we ended up with was a full-time person at the cathedral, at Christ Cathedral. And, you know, this is such a huge parish. Many cathedral parishes are either no parish
right.
at all.
Negligible,
or,
almost.
Yes,
yeah.
It just, you know, we grew in the Diocese of Philadelphia, in the Archdiocese there, only when there was a big convention in town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were a downtown church.
We're an ongoing convention here
in
the Diocese
gosh,
of Orange.
This place is a zoo in the best sense of
in
the word.
In the holiest kind of zoo.
Yeah, it's just wild, you know. I mean, there's no way every musical colleague I've brought here to the campus to come visit me, I'll say, I don't care how long you stay, stay a month, stay a day, but you must be here on a weekend. Because there's no way to describe what happens here. It's so unusual. First of all, you know, we have 12 masses in four languages.
In all the languages.
And every hour and a half, there's another different 1,000 people sitting in front of you. And in comes this choir and out goes that choir. And, you know, and we're forming choirs like crazy. And we now have a wonderful cathedral choir. Our Spanish program under Ricardo Soto is unbelievable. Untouched, unmatched anywhere in the country.
So is each culture have its own sort of priorities in terms of musical expression that you have
to
bring in different
instruments?
Well, they
do, and I'm sort of the one overseeing all of it. And mm-hmm. we're just now beginning to work with the Vietnamese more. But Ricardo Soto and I are in total harmony in terms of the English and Spanish. We share a lot of repertoire, things I might sing at the English Mass. He will translate and sing also at the proper
Mass. So is it just really translations of one Mass to another, or does each Mass, each language, each culture kind of have its own way of expressing?
Well, they do. They have their own repertoire. And part of my job as music director is help them to know that we also have a repertoire of the Catholic Church. And so what we have going on here at Christ Cathedral, and we're certainly a model for the whole country because we, I think, do it better than any of them. But what we have going on here is we really have Vietnamese liturgies. And when I first started, we had Spanish liturgies and we had English liturgies. And while now, at least in the Spanish and the English, we have more Roman Catholic liturgies that have a Spanish bent. Mm-hmm. In other words, we'll do some Spanish music, but we'll also do some Gregorian chant. This past Sunday, our Spanish choir sang a Latin motet.
Really?
You know, and
really cool.
At the English Mass, we sang a different Latin. You know, I mean, so it's
Latin. Do you do any Latin at all?
All the time.
Okay.
And Greek as well. The Kyrie, the Alleluia, the Agnus Dei, the Amen. Those are all things that every community can sing, mm-hmm. you know, and we've got 5,000 years of tradition that we must honor. In other words, if our Spanish community had not been singing any chant up until this time, and now they know a whole set of chant mass parts. So they have that sense that they're part of the universal church.
What was the how did music first begin to play into our expressions of faith? I know that art, fine art, was used to actually tell stories, the stained glass and the different paintings and mosaics, because of the people not actually having access to books or being able to read. So they told the stories. When did music become such an integral part of liturgy?
Well, long before art. I mean, we re-inherited it from our Jewish ancestors, of course. But music was an oral experience. It wasn't congregational. In other words, there was a cantor. The rabbi and the cantor were equal in terms of their liturgical knowledge and their spiritual knowledge, their biblical knowledge. You know, if you couldn't see the rabbi, you would see the cantor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, with this kind of heritage, this rich heritage that we have in the faith with music, I'd have to say that Catholics get kind of a low grade on the report card for participating with singing in church. I mean, if you go to our Protestant brothers and sisters, the churches, the congregation is like full on singing. You go into a Catholic church and frequently, you know, you're the only one in the pew singing.
Yes.
Or the guy in front
Every
of
time
you.
I went to church with my kids, they go, "Too loud, Dad. Too loud, Dad."
Well, exactly. Yeah. When you can hear yourself, you think, no, this should be, I should be lost
well,
in the crowd.
I must say, I'm very proud of our congregation here at Christ Cathedral. They're doing pretty well, and they're really singing out with a lot of music that's new. Spanish community just blows the roof off.
Okay, there you go. It's cultural then, maybe.
Yeah, it is cultural.
And what do you think between men and women? I mean, sometimes men are, we raise three sons, and they're kind of self-conscious. They used to love to sing until you put them in the pew, and then
right.
they're like, eh,
yeah,
well, I'm embarrassed.
And some of that, you know, I mean, you see our choir kids now as little disciples, you know, which is why children's choirs is such an important thing, because they're telling mom and dad, come on, pick up your book. You know, we gotta get going here,
Don't leave me out here alone.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I do. Dr. O'Meary told me I got to sing. So they do.
Well, tell us about your children's choir.
Our children's choir is great. We've just started about a year ago. We've just finished our first season. We're about 63 strong from all over the diocese, from about 20-some parishes.
Yeah, and this is a 64 parish diocese.
Right,
so really
and so we got a good percentage for the first year. We just had choir camp again this summer with 105 kids. and they sang a wonderful closing liturgy. But we don't sing kiddie music. We sang two pieces of chant.
No junk food.
You know, we give them the very best. And there wasn't anybody going, well, where's the drum set? Where's the, you know, these were all kids that they've drunk the Kool-Aid. You know, they're ready to go.
That's awesome, though, because they will always have that great appreciation in that ear. And it really is supposed to be something of a supernatural language.
Right.
It shouldn't be a common one. Now, you were classically trained. And in fact, Dr. Romeri, John, because we know each other now, we have some education in common.
Where's that?
At the University of the Pacific.
Oh.
I went to the University of the Pacific in Stockton, and Dr.
So
John
Romeri
graduated from the Conservatory of Music,
which
was a very
organ major
school.
There. I went to there about 4 summers through high school. And so when I applied for college, my dad said, well, where do you want to go? And I applied to Berkeley and Stanford, but UOP was so...
UOP was cool.
Wasn't that a great college, though? Great college. The conservatory was excellent. Yeah. And I had a wonderful teacher, you know, who really sent me on my way. You know,
That's awesome.
All of those summer experiences in my 4 years there were amazing.
Well, I was in the theater department. So I think the conservatory was a little more self-contained.
Yeah.
But do you know one of the most, aside from yourself, they have quite a few distinguished alum, including Chris Isaac, which I found out later in life, and I was a big Chris Isaac fan.
Well, and Dave Brubeck, you know, I mean,
Dave Brubeck,
there were great,
yes.
great musicians
yeah.
who went there.
So with this, and you went on to get a vast
Then I went on to my master's at Westminster Choir College. My professor at UOP, his only mission was to send me to Union Seminary, which is where all of his, in New York, the School of Music there, all of his students had all gone there for their master's and doctorate. And I went there with my college roommate, dutifully going there as we were supposed to, and the school closed. And so
a person could get paranoid.
I know. What did I say here? So they Westminster Choir College adopted the 5 little orphans that we were, 2 of which were from UOP. And so it was a wonderful 2 years of getting my master's. I met my wife there, who was from the University of Michigan, getting her master's there. So it was a great school, did wonderful things there. And
then you went on from there to get your doctorate.
And I received an honorary doctorate from the Lindenwood University in St. Louis. Oh. I was working on a degree at Duquesne. I was an adjunct teacher there, and so I could do it for free.
Nice.
But when I moved to St. Louis, there was no degree program except musicology, which meant you didn't make music, you just studied it. You know, so I thought, oh.
And you were playing instruments? How many instruments?
Yes, well, I play the organ and harpsichord and piano, of course, but.
Those are hard to take with you from playing.
Yes,
you can't,
exactly.
So it's hard at a party,
you know,
to say, I brought my organ with me.
I count on the churches to have these fabulous
yes.
instruments, and boy, did I hit the jackpot here.
Yes.
Huh? So.
Well, tell us, I do have to tell our listeners that this, we're not talking about just any organ here at the Christ Cathedral.
This is not your mother's organ.
This is not your mother's organ. It's a 16,000 pipe organ?
Well, almost 20. Almost 20,000. Yeah, it's really
so it's
one
grown
of the
since
great organs of the world. And
Hazel Wright organ.
And Hazel Wright was the one who gave the first million to begin to put it together. Virgil Fox, that very famous organist, Virgil, was the one that sort of designed it. Because it really wasn't one organ, it was several, especially components from the Arboretum. There was a big Raffati in there from Italy. And then they got the organ out of New York Philharmonic Hall, an Aeolian Skinner there. And so these two organs were combined masterfully by Virgil Fox. And he somehow, or somebody, got probably Dr. Schuller.
Who was the pastor of
yes.
Crystal Cathedral before we
got Mrs. Wright to give this money. And she gave $1 million for the organ to put it in and another million for its endowment.
And then it is just now returning from its visit
yes.
to Padua,
so,
where it was completely restored to its full grandeur.
Right. It had gone into such disrepair. I mean, pipes melted into each other. Mildew, birds, you know.
Because of neglect.
Yes, just total neglect. And, of course, the building being open. You know, the building, the walls opened, and, you know, every rug in Los Angeles flew right in.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of work to do. It was tragic.
Wow.
And but Monsignor Art, Father Christopher, Bishop Van knew that this was an icon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the most treasured thing on the campus.
And Reverend Schuller, God rest his soul, would have been crestfallen if he'd felt
that
organ was not going to be used anymore. So how do you play an organ with that many pipes? Now, Jimmy G is a Dodger fan, so he's used to the organs that they play at baseball stadiums.
Yeah, there you go.
So what is the difference between, an, you know, maybe from an audio standpoint, from an electronic organ and a pipe organ?
Well, a pipe organ, of course, is winded. It has life. It has breath. It's all winded by air. And so it's just really a giant box of whistles, no matter how large it is. These pipes sit on these chests, and the air is under compression. And when you push the key down, a little tiny door, so we have 20,000 little tiny doors, drop down, and the air shoots through like a whistle.
Yeah.
And you always see a little mouth on the pipe, and the air comes out the mouth. And so if you had your hand there, you'd feel it as it's going, and that's what makes...
Each pipe have a different sound?
Each pipe only has one note.
Okay.
You know, so like a flute can play octaves of worth of notes with one pipe, you know, but it's the least economical instrument. You know, we need one note for every key. So with 61 keys, every set of sounds has to have 61 pipes.
Okay, so how do you identify what pipe you're hitting if you only have so many keys and almost 20,000 pipes?
Well, you have, it's the stops, you know, the little knobs on the side.
Okay.
So every time you pull out another knob, you're actually activating another color.
Okay.
You know, and so that turns on a set of 61 pipes. They all look the same because you want the sound to be the same.
Yeah.
But the littlest one to the biggest one and the lowest one is the biggest one. And so that the next rank of pipes will look completely different.
It's kind of like our levels of choirs of angels.
Yes, exactly. It's, you know, so you've got all of these ranks. You know, we have almost 300 ranks, which means 300 colors, 300 different sounds. And each rank is constructed of different metal, some wood, some, you know, more tin, more lead, some with felt, some with a little chimney, so many different things, each one to produce a different sound.
And you know how to play this organ.
I do.
Wow. I mean, that is
well,
an
any fine organist does, you know. I mean, they're basically, no matter how big or little, the same instrument, you know.
I don't think so. Yeah. Come on. I don't think your average parish organist can go in and play.
Well, it might be a little frightening, but it's, you
the
know,
beast.
It's
going
just,
in to play the beast. What's your favorite thing to play on that beautiful organ?
Well, I haven't done it yet, but.
Well, what are you most excited about?
Well, you know, I love French music. I love Bach. You know, there's so many, but also I love to play for a service. That's probably my favorite thing to do is actually accompany the congregation and accompany the choir and really lead worship with, and the more colors you have, of course, the more fun it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to improvise, you know, part of Catholic.
A little improvising.
Yes,
okay.
Part of Catholic liturgy is to improvise.
Okay.
You know, so a Catholic organist and jazz musicians are the ones who have to improvise the most. In other words, when the procession's going and the hymn is almost finished, or in between the verses, it's the organist who extends
noodling
that.
Noodling around
exactly.
There.
Exactly. It's not just
so
noodling.
So can you make a mistake?
Of course. Salvation's only half step away.
And so,
but that's part of liturgical playing is to make it fit so that when the bishop hits that chair, you know, the piece is finished.
Is there any delay between the time you hit the key and the sound coming
out? It depends on where the pipes are. You know, I haven't played this one yet, but, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of delay. In the cathedral in St. Louis, we had pipes all the way to the back of the cathedral, some in the dome everywhere. It, too, was a huge instrument. And, you know, you could play a whole little phrase, and then it began to play in the back.
Oh, wow. So, you know, delay
so,
there.
Yeah, a delay in the sense of you hearing it.
Like, hey, so quickly, Dr. John Ramirez, here at the Diocese of Orange, tell us what you have in store for the music ministry right here at Christ Cathedral.
Well, there are so many exciting things. You know, we have our Carillon series in the weeks of Easter, our concert series. This year we have the organist from Notre Dame in Paris coming.
My.
We have, and that'll be in the Arboretum in October. Also, we have Stile Antico, a wonderful Renaissance choir from London. We have four very famous organists playing in February. John Ramirez, one of them.
And I've heard of him, haven't
very
you?
Very famous.
Yep.
And David Ball.
He went to UOP.
Our real principal organist,
okay,
who is here from Juilliard, just finished his master's at Juilliard, was my former student and is now here. And Father Christopher Smith and Bishop Kevin Vann. All four of us
Some local luminaries.
Yes, all four of us will
and
be
Bishop
playing.
And Bishop Vann can play?
Bishop Vann. Ioannis, a fine organist. Yes.
Well, you know, and I want
Father Christopher.
And Father Chris. So Father Chris Smith, who is the rector of Christ Cathedral.
He's the rector of Christ Cathedral.
So I want to tell our listeners, you hear the term arboretum. For those of you that have never visited our campus, that live far away from here, I want to clarify that the arboretum is one of the lovely buildings on campus that is being used as a church for mass services while the big 10,000 pane glass Christ Cathedral is being renovated and brought to its.
So we have 11 masses in there on a weekend.
Wow.
It's wild. 1,000 people every hour and a half.
You know, you just got a joyful look on your face, so this is not stressful for you at all.
It is from time to time, but it's great. You know, I'm so proud of our choirs and we have an organ scholar program, young organists being trained.
Lots going on here.
Lots and lots
going
on.
This is going to be kind of the musical nerve center of the Catholic Church in America. That's awesome.
It's going to be one of those places.
Well, you know, and if you'd like to know more about what Dr. John Romeri and his department is doing here at the diocese, you can go to ChristCathedralMusic.org. And he has a wonderful website there that shows all the different programs and also gives
all of our shows
and
from Music in the Tower.
From Music on the Tower's
all
radio show.
All of the concerts are there. You can already purchase tickets for this coming season.
Yeah. Okay.
All about the choirs. You can audition.
Okay. Well, it's a multi-purpose website. Very good. Okay, Dr. John Romeri, thank you for what you do here in the diocese.
My
and
pleasure.
And really honoring God with the very best music we can present.
We're giving it
men.
Our best shot.
Yeah. And thanks for sharing your interesting background and musical knowledge with us. If you would like to know more, like I said, go to ChristCathedralMusic.org.
Perfect.
And you can know more about this very, very interesting man. Coming up next is our Chatting with Catholics segment, where we're carrying forth the theme of music into the pews. And I'm asking some local parishioners at a Sunday liturgy how they feel about singing in Mass. How do you feel about it? Well, stay with us and we'll see if their response resonates with yours. We'll be right back. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Amazon Echo is your virtual personal assistant that allows you to use just your voice. You can listen to Encounter with Dan Demite and Patrick Rice just by saying, Alexa, play EWTN Radio. Check out the Amazon Echo today.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hi, kids. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am your host, Peggy Normandin, and I have really enjoyed our music class today. We've talked about the Christfest Big Music Extravaganza happening here on the Christ Cathedral campus on September 8th and 9th. And then we met Dr. John Romeri, who runs the music ministries here in the diocese. Now we're going to take our conversation into the streets, well, more like into the pews, and ask some local parishioners how they feel about singing during Mass. Let's see if you agree with what they have to say.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
Hey, I'm just taking an informal poll of parishioners. How do you feel about singing at Mass? Do you like to sing?
I have a terrible voice, but I sing along.
Now he's lying. He does not sing.
Ritualistic.
You mouth the words, you mean?
If it's a song from the hymnal, it's best
let the pros do it.
Right.
Hey,
do you
like to sing at Mass?
No.
What, you like to just listen, or do you not like the music at all?
I just like to listen mostly.
The time is going to come, my man, where you're going to have to join in.
Yep.
Do you like to sing at Mass?
I like to sing at Mass.
Okay, nobody's being honest with me yet.
Not loudly.
Do you like to sing at Mass?
Yes.
Do you sing at Mass?
Well, I sing whatever they're playing if I know it.
Well, I'm not talking about solos. Some people prefer to have the choir sing.
No, I love, and you know, the reason I love this service, I love the combo and the music and the things.
Yeah, it's very sing-alongable.
I like that.
How about you? Do you like to sing at Mass?
I sure, as long as it's not 6:30 a.m. Mass. Yeah.
Too early for singing.
Too early for singing, but this is fine. My wife does more of the singing than I do.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. I think the 6:30 Mass doesn't have as much singing because people kind of choose that early Mass because they want a quieter, more spoken Mass. How about you? Do you like to sing at Mass?
I love to sing at Mass, yes.
Do you like to sing at Mass?
I sing the ones that I know.
Yeah, and you let everybody else do the rest.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
How about you? Do you like to sing at church?
Yeah.
Which songs are your favorites?
You like Glory to God?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you like part of the liturgical singing. Yeah, that's nice. Glory to God, glory to God. Do you like to sing at Mass?
Sure. When I know the words.
Yeah. Do you like to sing at Mass?
In the pews, I love singing.
Do you like singing at Mass?
Yeah.
Do you sing along with everything?
Most things, but I would not join choir.
Okay. That's all right. Not all of us are destined for choir singing. No, those are the experts. How about you? Do you like singing at Mass?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you sing at Mass?
Erica. I sing with Mom.
How about you? Do you like to sing at Mass?
I do not sing in Mass. I save.
Hey, thank you. Finally, somebody is being honest with me.
I save everybody around us from my horrible singing voice.
I'm kind of late to the party on it. I'm like so many that have an excuse for not singing, or I used to be. Oh, I've got a bad singing voice, etc. But and I'm trying to do more of it and try to encourage people around me to do it.
Do you think it's a male-female thing? Do you think men are a little less comfortable singing than women?
Probably that's part of it, too, yeah.
When I go to the church where I was a child, I know all the words, so I sing.
It is only in my Catholic training to understand that singing, especially at the beginning of Mass, before it all starts, is the one thing that's supposed to take us out of inside our head and bring us out. If you don't sing, you're going to be in your head.
You're only half present.
Right.
And my aunt came from Argentina to visit here in California. She was here for about a month. And we went to this Mass here in Orange County, and I was singing, but I wasn't very loud. And she sings very loud in Spanish, but she was singing. So she told me, Paul, you need to sing louder because we are praying when we're singing. So you have to take advantage of this. So I am trying more and more every week to do that.
Like singing at Mass? I thought it was mandatory to sing at Mass.
Well, do you sing at Mass?
I do sing at Mass.
Well, I think some of it is mandatory, like the responses and things like that.
I was just making a comment because I'm visiting today that there are no big screens to show the words.
Okay. All right, put it in the suggestion box. So, Father Brandon, I'm doing this informal poll asking people whether people like to sing at Mass. Now, you were the presider at Mass this morning, and you have a beautiful voice. When you look out in the congregation, do you see 100% participation in the singing?
Well, I mean, we would love to have 100%. And, I mean, everybody's in kind of their own spiritual place, you know, for it. I mean, I always encourage singing, as you know, like through Mass, and I chant everything that I can, especially on a Sunday, you know, with that. But to say on a mathematical level, 100%, I don't see that. So I wish to encourage through my own example of singing and everything.
Well, I think people love hearing your voice so much that it's like, well, I'm just going to be quiet and listen to you.
Sure. Right.
Okay, I can almost hear our closing jingle as we wrap up the show on the music of our faith. Lots of good EWTN radio programming ahead for you. Up next is 2 hours of The Good Fight with Barbara McGuigan. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/callmecatholic. We'll have all the website info from today's conversations up posted there, as well as pictures and comments and all kinds of good stuff. So check out the Call Me Catholic Facebook page and give us a like. But mostly, we want you to tune in again next week for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.